This is Chodesh Shvat of the year Tov Shin Samach Aleph, which corresponds to the 24th of January of the year 2001. Okay, all right, we are now. Okay, the Gemara, Rosh Hashanah, Lamed Gimel, Omid Aleph, as we're continuing from where we left off last week. Okay. Okay, I'll tell you right now what line we are. Okay. yeah. Okay. We are five lines from the bottom. Six lines, if you wish. All right. The Mishnah was talking, the best thing would be to review the Mishnah once more, than is this particular part of the Mishnah, so we see what we're talking about. Okay? The Mishnah on the previous page, that would be on Lamed Beis, Omid Beis, okay, the very bottom of the page, it spoke about the shofar, and then it says that Ein ma'akvin es ha'tinokos ben es koach. Okay, so the Mishnah says that we do not prevent children from blowing shofar, but instead we work with them in order to teach them, you know, how to blow shofar. The Amisasek lo yotza. However, when you're doing this, you're not fulfilling the obligation of blowing shofar on Rosh Hashanah. It's only incidental. All that you're doing is just giving a demonstration, but you're not actually fulfilling the mitzvah. And therefore, the Mishnah concludes by saying, that if a person listens to the sound of the shofar for somebody who's just doing this practicing, so to speak, or is teaching, you know, a child how to learn how to blow shofar, he did not fulfill his obligation. All right, so this is what the Mishnah said. Now, along comes the Gemara, and it says, Omar Rabbi Elazar, so Rabbi Elazar said, Afilu b'Shabbos. He says, even on Shabbos, what? That you're permitted to teach kids how to blow shofar. Needless to say, this is very startling, and we'll come back to this in a moment. But first I want to take the text of the Gemara. Okay. So, here was a statement made, right, by Rabbi Elazar. He says, Afilu b'Shabbos, even on Shabbos you're permitted to do it. And then they quote another citation which sort of reinforces that the Tof Nun Hei means Tanya Nami Hocha. We have also learned another baraisa which says, Misatskin Bahen Ad She Yilmedu Afilu b'Shabbos, that you are permitted to practice together with them so that they would learn how to blow shofar even on Shabbos. And it continues, and it says, "V'yed mi akvin atinokos miliskoa b'Shabbos," and you do not prevent children from blowing shofar on Shabbos. V'yein tzorech lomar b'yom tov, and of course we don't have to add the fact that certainly if it's yom tov and not Shabbos, you don't prevent them from blowing shofar. So now it says, "Hogufakash." This in itself already is a difficulty. Why? First he said, Amrit Misatskin Bahin Hatsha Yumidu Vafil B'Shabbos, right? The wording is such that you practice together with them until they learn, and even on Shabbos. So Alma, in that case, from the wording, it's Lachat Chilam. It shows that what you're saying to them is to begin with. You're saying to them, Tikku, blow shofar. V'hadar tana, and then the statement continues, and it says what? Ein me'akvin. You do not prevent them. So it says, ikuvahu delo me'akvin. You don't prevent them. But, ho'lechat chino, lo. Lo amrin and tikku. So, to begin with, you don't say to them, go blow shofar. So, how do you resolve this difficulty? Because obviously if you say blow and then you say you don't prevent them from doing, but obviously if you don't prevent them, it means that they're doing it on their own, but you know, you're not stopping them from doing it, right? So he says lo kasha. He says it's not a kasha. He says kan de koton. Oh, that's the next page. Okay, Phil, you have the distribution rights. Give the next page out.
Top of the page.
The top. So it says, harbor cotton. In one case, it's talking about a cotton, a minor, you know, someone who is still not an adult, but shehigia lechinuch, he's reached the age where he has to begin to learn how to perform. In other words, he has already enough background, experience, intelligence, etc. And the kanda cotton, in the other case, is the case of a minor, shehigia lechinuch, he has not yet reached the age of chinuch. So Rashi explains, this is at the top of the page, he says if a boy is already old enough to understand what's going on, then misaskin bahem sheyilbetu, and in that particular case you have to take the trouble to teach them how to do it. Okay, the kol shekein, and certainly all the more so she'ein ma'akvin, you don't prevent them from doing it. But if it is a cotton shalohigiyah lechinuch, then you don't do it. Okay, so now that comes back again from the original problem which exists over here. From this, it would seem, in other words, that it is permissible to let the kids blow shofar on Shabbos. Okay? Now, we know that we do not blow shofar on Shabbos. So how could you say, you know, let children do it on Shabbos? So the answer is that they give, you remember that earlier we had the whole business about the takana, you know, the enactment that was made by Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. We remember that in the Beis HaMikdash they blew shofar on Shabbos. It was permissible over there. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai gave permission to the Beis Din in Yavne that they should continue the same practice in Yavne. And we also learned in that connection that if it was done in Yavne, that it might be done in even outside of the room of the Beis HaMikdash, and certainly in the Yerushalayim, that the people used to do it on Shabbos over there. Okay. But then we also learned that you don't do it on Shabbos. So why don't we do it on Shabbos? Because what are you going to do? You're going to carry it in the street in order to show a mumcha, a baki, you know, how to do it, so they should teach you how to blow shofar. And, you know, you'll be carrying in violation of the rules of Shabbos. So that, therefore, the final conclusion is that even though it says over here that you're permitted to do it, nevertheless, we follow that since we do not blow shofar on Shabbos, we certainly don't permit the children either to blow shofar, because in the final analysis, they are not performing it for a mitzvah. If we were doing it for the mitzvah in order to fulfill blowing shofar, there might be some justification for it. But as much as we don't have that justification today, so we don't do it. Okay.
Right. He doesn't know if the child is born up.
Yeah, right, of course. That's obvious. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. All right, so that we would say, you know, that as far as carrying is concerned, that particular reason, you know, might be overlooked, okay? But nevertheless, the fact is that we also learned that when the Beis HaMikdash was in existence, then they did it. But after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, then in that particular case, we don't do it, period, okay? And the fact that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai gave permission, again, that was in order to keep alive the tradition, but obviously, you know, once the authority of the Beis Din was lost because of the various persecutions due to the Roman persecution, Christian persecution later on, and so on and so forth, so we don't do it anymore. Yes, yes, definitely, right. Well, that already is a different question. Are the laws of Erev, are they b'daraisa or are they b'drabanan? In the Gemara, you know, we have two Masechtas that deal particularly with that. I mean, one is Gemara Shabbos, and the other one is Masechta Erevin. which deals particularly, you know, with the business of the Erev, okay? But there's no question that they base it on biblical verses. But the question is, you know, to what extent? This is already a question of what the rabbi said. Where is actually the prohibition to be found? The answer is, it's in the interpretation that we have in connection with the giving of the man in the wilderness. Remember, they were not allowed to go out on Shabbos in order to collect man. Okay? And the wording over there is, Al Yetzei Ish Mebeiso B'Yom HaShabbos. The person is not to go out of his house on Shabbos. Okay? So from this, we learn that you're not allowed to go out into what we call the Rishus HaRabim. In other words, you know, the area which is open to everyone
public,
to go back and
area.
Forth, you know, the public street, public highway, whatever it may be, and so on. You're not allowed to do it on Shabbos, okay? And that applies to, of course, you know, the fact, you know, you're not allowed either to take out from the house something and carry it over there, or not allowed to bring in something from the street, right, and bring it into your house. This is, yes.
Is that where the
Karaites
started, where they sat in the house on Shabbos and never went out?
Yeah, undoubtedly. Right, they took it very, very literally. Right. Right. Yeah, of course. I mean, there's certain things that they observe very literally that we don't. I mean, you know, according to rabbinic interpretation, where it says, Lo Savaru Esh Bechol Meshmeisechem, you're not to burn fire in all your homes on Shabbos. We say, yeah, but if you prepare it before Shabbos, according to all the rules and regulations that we have, then that particular case is permitted. Not only permitted, but it adds to the joy of Shabbos to have light and to be able to have warm food and things like that. So,
there's some people who eat cold in Shabbos. But
yeah,
there are some poskim who say you should not eat cold in Shabbos because the Karaim didn't eat cold, you shouldn't be like that.
Yeah, correct. Correct. No
question. The opposite.
I mean, in other words, right, so for that reason we should have something warm to eat on Shabbos in order to show that the Ribbono Shel Olam gave us a Shabbos in order to enjoy, and part of the enjoyment is to be able to eat warm food.
Large areas,
yeah.
Even with the window, there's a sentence
of Karaites,
so we shouldn't look
at it. Okay, so to sum up then, as far as this is concerned, there's no question that even though this gives permission, but nevertheless, we don't do it, period. Okay. All right. Now the general question is, v'abnisasek lo yotza. Remember, it says in the Mishnah that a person who is teaching or practicing, you know, but he's not actually, you know, doing it in order to fulfill the mitzvah of blowing shofar, right? So in that particular case, lo yotzo, he did not fulfill the obligation that you have to have of blowing shofar on Rosh Hashanah, okay? So, then they bring in something that we had quoted before, but here is the first case, this is the primary case. It says, hotokeya nashir yotzo. But nevertheless, if a person has a shofar and he practices making the notes on it, then in that particular case, if he happens to choose the right notes, he could be yotze, he could have fulfilled his obligation with that. Okay? In other words, he blows on his shofar, tkiya, shvorim, truot, tkiya, etc., etc., etc. Okay? So that's tokeya l'shir. He does it simply because he likes to make beautiful sounds with the shofar.
He likes the sound.
Yeah. So the Gemara says, Lema Messiah Lema Roba. Are we to say then that this part of the Mishnah which says okay on the show, and this part of the Baraisa really, yeah, is yes, are we to say then that this is confirmed by a statement you know, of Rava, as if this lends support to one of Rava's statements, the Omar Rava, because Rava is quoted as saying Hatokei on the shir yotza, right? In other words, if you blow, that's right, you fulfilled your obligation. So the Gemara says, well, Dilma Tokei on the shir, Nami Misasa Koile. Wait, maybe that's not so. Maybe if a person is blowing the shofar just to make sounds on it because he likes the sound of it, he is like a misasik. In other words, what? He's only engaged in a practice session and he's not doing it in order to fulfill. And in that particular case, then we would have to say what? That he did not fulfill his obligation. So it all depends, you know, whether he really intended when he did it or he didn't. And of course, again, that brings back the whole thing that we had before, that for blowing shofar, you have to have the intention of blowing the shofar in order to fulfill the obligation. And the person who hears it also has to have the intention that he fulfills his obligation by listening to the sound of the shofar. Okay. Now, the Hashomeim and the Sasek lo yotza. The Mishnah concluded by saying that if a person hears the sounds of the shofar from somebody who's only practicing, but, you know, he's not doing it with the intention of blowing shofar, you know, for the mitzvah, so in that particular case, he has not fulfilled his obligation. So the Gemara adds, Avol Hashomeya min hamashmiya liatzmo mai yotza, right? But if a person listens to the person who is blowing shofar for himself, let's say a person wants to blow shofar for himself, you understand, and he wants to fulfill the obligation. Now we're not talking about, you know, he's just practicing, but, you know, he's a private individual, he has a shofar, and he decides that he wants to blow shofar for himself. Okay, whatever reason. So in that particular case, the question is whether a person who hears the blowing of the shofar from him, right? What is the answer? Yotza? Are we to say then that what? That he has fulfilled his obligation? So leimor tavei to yufta the Rabbi Zera. In that case, we'd say that this is a contradiction to a question posed by Rabbi Zera. The Omar le Rabbi Zera le Shomei, because Rabbi Zera said to his shamus, to his attendant, he says to him, Ich wern utakali. Have in mind right now that you want to blow the shofar to fulfill the mitzvah, right? And blow for me. In other words, let me fulfill the obligation by your blowing. So in other words, what did Rabbi Zera say? He said, you have to have the mind. You have to have the kavana that this is what you right. want to do. And in that case, you know, you could be not only mashmiya for yourself, but also it can be mashmiya for the others, you know, whoever wants to listen to you. Right, right.
He has to announce it.
Yes, it should be announced, right.
Yeah. He doesn't. But he doesn't blow and have in mind to blow
right.
for me.
Right.
You have to have in mind to blow for me.
Yeah.
The question is he sent Yossi himself?
Yeah.
The fellow who was whom he tends to blow for him.
Yeah. All right. So anyway, to conclude this, it says Dilma. Maybe he says I did the Tana Reisha Misasek, inasmuch as first in the mission they learned about this business of Misasek. You know, so Tana Sefer Lama Misasek. So maybe this one where it says on Misasek LeYotza and so on, this refers to even, you know, if somebody blows but without the kavana, or as Rashi puts it over there. Okay. It says Tana Sefer Nami Misasek. It says Uli Yolam. Always, it says Hashomeya Min Hamashmiya Liatzmo Shalomis Kavein Lahotzis Hashomeim Lo Yotza. That if you hear the shofar blown by somebody who is blowing only for himself, without having in mind the kavana that he wants to enable those who happen to hear the sound to be yotze, then in that particular case, lo yotza. In that case, you're not fulfilling the obligation. Mm. So that, therefore, when a person blows the shofar for the eilam, he has to have in mind the fact that he's doing it in order to be mercy, in order to enable others, you know, to fulfill the obligation of hearing the shofar. And then in that particular case, you know, not only he wants to do it, but also the congregation also, who's listening, wants to fulfill the obligation through the blowing of the
Baltic.
Yes.
You know, some say it's our custom to call out the tekiyos.
Yes. Right.
As they've been blown.
Yes.
Before Ichino, right.
Right, right, yeah.
But there are some that say you're not supposed to do that. You're not supposed to interrupt the hearing of the blowing of the shofar.
Well, the custom has spread so already. I mean, that we do it really in order to be sure that we're giving the proper notice to the Baltic here that he blows the right note.
Well, I specifically refer to Harold Dobbin.
Yeah.
They don't blow. They point to the kia in the book.
Yeah.
But they don't announce it.
Well, my question is in that reference. Okay, are we talking there now about the kios that we do before we start musaf, or are we talking about those that they blow in the middle of the Shilish Manasra?
No. This is on the repetition. During the repetition.
In the middle of Shemun Esrei, that's a different story.
Yeah. This has nothing to do with the, doing it during the silent Amida, when the custom of the Hasidim is Svardim is to blow.
No.
Okay. Well, I have a simple answer. I can ask Bob, what do they do in Kesser? Which minhag are they following over there? Do they or do they not say Tekiyah, Shvorim, Thrua? They say it, of course.
The first.
You mean before Musaf?
Before.
Yeah. Now, during the silent Shemun Esrei, do they say it or not?
No, don't say it.
Then they don't say it.
Well, what about the repetition?
Now, when the Chazal repeats Shemun Esrei, we say Malchias, the Chinuch of Shavuos, do they or do they not? Yeah,
I don't think they do.
Where?
In Musaf.
In Musaf?
Yeah. They just
roll
without
the announcement. I could see it during the silence minister, but I don't see it during the, where the Chazan says the Musaf about. Yeah, yeah.
They blow
silent, I could see.
Silent, yeah.
Huh? I'm not saying they don't blow. I know that they blow. The question is, does somebody say Tekiyo, Shmorim, through Tekiyo, or not? That's what I'm asking.
I think so.
Yes, they do.
They do. In Lubavitch, they don't do it. Okay. All right. So, take your pick.
Keza is not...
They point.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
That's what they do. They point, yeah.
Okay. Good enough. All right. It's not our minhag, that's all. Okay. All right. Now the Mishnah continues and says, say the tekiyos, shalosh, shal shalosh, shalosh. Which means that the order of blowing shofar consists of three sets of three and three. That's fine. Okay, so it means, in other words, you have to blow at least nine sounds, right? And that's what one of the nine sounds, tekiyah, shvorim, trua, tekiyah, right? Tekiyah, middle note, okay, tekiyah, okay? Why do I say that? Because now we're going to see that we're coming into a question as to what is the middle note, okay? Yeah, this is where we start.
Middle note.
Yeah, all right. So we'll learn a little bit down towards the bottom of the page, and then we'll call it a night. Okay. So first of all, it says as follows. Shiur tekiya, the length of a tekiya has to be kisholosh truas. It has to be equivalent to the length of three truas, right?
Yeah.
In other words, with the tekiya is tekiya, then the trua should be okay, supposedly. Right, okay, so that the length of time the teruas would be equivalent to the length of one tekiyah. No, one tekiyah.
One tekiyah.
Right, okay. Then it says, shiur terua, and how about the sound of a terua? Okay. So he says, kisholosh yevolos. So how long does the two have to be? He says it has to be like three yevavas. So God's fine. Uh-huh. Of course, the question is, what's a yevava? Well, that the Gemara is going to go into. Okay. Then he says, Moshe, talk about Rishonu Moshe Pashniyah. Let's say he blew the tekiyot, you know, after the concluding the first set, you know, tekiyah, blank tekiyah, right? Let's say tekiyah shvarm tekiyah, tekiyah true tekiyah, okay? The Mishnah is talking about true, it doesn't mention the word shvarm, okay?
Right.
So let's say it's tekiyah, trua, tekiyah. But the tekiyah that he blew after the trua, he decides to lengthen it, okay? So that really it has the length of two tekiyahs, right? This is what he's saying over here, all right? So Moshe Mashiach Kishtayim, right? As, you know, the length now becomes, you know, one tekiyah, but it's the equivalent in sound of two tekiyahs. So the Mishnah says, Ein biyodo ela achas. No, it counts only as one tekiyah. In other words, for the next line, so to speak, he has to say, he has to blow again a tekiyah. It's not yotze with one great big long tekiyah, thinking that it counts as two. Okay?
Aye.
Yeah. Ah, we need another page. Okay. Yeah. Is this it?
No, you have it.
Still has
one,
it?
Who
okay.
Who wants it?
Pass it down.
Down there. Yeah, take it.
How many do they want?
Two, I think. Three. Two.
One is enough? Yeah. Okay. Okay.
Well, let's get this straight.
Now, all right, so far, I mean, what we've learned is that you have to blow three sets, right? And we know not only that, but we also say that the tekiyah has to be the same length as three truas, right? And what is the length of an individual trua?
Sure.
The answer is that it's three yavamas. Okay, three yavamas. Okay, this is what we're saying. Okay. Then we learned that Toka Barishona, that at the end of the first set he blew a tekiyah, but he dragged it out, thinking that maybe it would count already as two, and he dragged it out for the same length as two. So the Mishnah says, Ein biyodo el achas. It counts only as one tekiyah, no matter how long he slept it out, but it's only one tekiyah. Okay?
All right.
Then he says, Misha berach. Yeah, where did we hear that one before, right? Only here it doesn't mean the same thing as what we're saying. Okay. What we're saying is, okay, first, and as Rashi explains, he says, it's Palel Tfilas Musaf, and you know, he Davin Musaf, right? Uveirach Tisha Brachas. He's already, said all the Brachas. Okay? He's already said all the Brachas. In other words, all the Eskurs, he did everything, okay? So, and then all of a sudden, what happens? The Achakach, and afterwards, this Manaloi Shofar, all of a sudden, he's able to get hold of a shofar. Then, in that particular case, Tokeya Umeriya Vitokeya Shalosh Pyomim, then he has to blow Tekiya and Trua and Tekiya three times. Okay? Now, the Mishnah concludes by saying, Kishem Sheshliach Tzibur Chayov, just as the Shliach Tzibur is required to fulfill his obligation of davening, right? Kach kol yochid v'yochid chayav. So likewise, every individual is required to daven. Okay? Rabbi Gamliel Omer, but Rabbi Gamliel says, Shliach Tzibur, he says that the chazan, the shliach tzibur, can enable everybody to fulfill their obligation of davening. Now, this is going to require a lot more explanation as we go along, okay? But, you know, to put it simply, it's a question. Is each individual required to daven for himself or herself, or are we saying that, you know, by listening to the chazan, you're yotzei? And under what circumstances are you yotzei?
Does that apply only to Rosh Hashanah?
Well, it starts with Rosh Hashanah, but obviously it applies to all year round. Okay? Question is, first of all, why do they single out for Rosh Hashanah? So the answer is because we add so much in the Musaf that you don't say in any other Musaf service. Yeah. Every other Muslim service, you know, you say Omitz, Kavutz, Kedushas Hashem, right?
Yeah.
And you say Kedushas Hayoim. Okay. And then you say Ritzei and Moedim and Sim Shalom, okay? But Rosh Hashanah, you have Malchias and Zechroinus and Shofar, so not everybody knew how to recite those things. Especially, we have to remember again, they didn't have Siddurim and Machzerim.
They didn't have Machzerim.
Right. So they had to have a Shliach Tzibur who knew how to daven. So, presumably, you had Yechidim, you had individuals who knew how to daven this, you know, they knew by heart how to daven these things, okay? They learned it, they practiced it, whatever, so they knew when they came to Rosh Hashanah, they knew how to daven by heart. So in that particular case, we would say that the first statement in the Mishnah, which says that every individual has an obligation, that would apply to them. If you know, by listening attentively to the chazan, you can be yoytzei with your obligation. Of course, that presents also other problems that we face in the modern shuls in America that they didn't have in those days. Talking specifically, that we take a look at the watch, and we see, you know, when it reaches late. 1 o'clock, or whatever it may be, and we feel pangs of hunger, or fatigue, or what, and so we go home, or something like that. Naturally, the idea is really not to go home. You should stay, and stay through the entire night.
If you don't stay, you're not Yosef, right?
Huh? If you don't, certainly if you don't know how to dive, you're not Yosef. If you know how to daven, and you daven for, you know, say the Shmoneh Esrei and so on, then already, you know, technically you have fulfilled the obligation as an individual. But I don't have to tell you, I have not fulfilled the obligation as far as being a member of a tzibur, as a member of a congregation, you haven't done it. So, this is why it's wrong, you know, to, as soon as Kedusha is over, you know, people run out, they go home, okay?
You said it sometime before.
And all of a sudden you have an empty shul.
That's right.
It's not done in yeshivas and places like that where people stay. I don't have to tell you that, okay?
But the right thing is to say. Start early and make it faster.
Pardon me?
Start earlier, start
they don't necessarily go faster. On the contrary, if they say word by word start, and so on and so forth, I mean, very often you find that they start at 7 in the morning and they don't get through until 3, 4 in the afternoon. Of course, if you hire a named chazan, you might have a similar situation.
What is the minimal requirement for women to hear, to listen on the Rosh Hashanah?
On Rosh Hashanah?
Yeah.
Well, they should recite the Shmoneh Esrei to the best of their ability. That's no question about that. But of course, they try to hear all the tekiyas, you know. But if you're going to hear all the tekiyas on Rosh Hashanah, you're really going to stay right through the end of the service. But, you know, we finish the service normally somewhere in the vicinity about 1:30, something like that. So it's not so gefährlich, you know. But of course, I mean, if a woman has young children to take care of at home, that's already a different story. So in that case, I would say the fact that they heard already the 30 sounds, you know, prior, and they heard, let's say, you know, at least something in the Muslim, I mean, they would fulfill a minimal amount. Right, yeah. You see, from the Mishnah, there it's even less, because it says 3 sets of 3, right?
I think that's 3 and 9.
That's 9. But in reality, the 9 becomes expanded. Okay.
But sometimes women are distracted by the children.
Yeah, of course. We understand. Or, of course. I mean, a woman has an obligation to care for family. There's no question.
Well, actually, is it really an obligation on their part to
Well, that's already a different story. This goes back to what we learned last week. Last week, if you recall, primarily I taught the Tosfos that we had over there. And major point that the Tosfos makes is that even though it's a mitzvah she'azman groba, this is a mitzvah which is dependent upon time, and women are excused from it, nevertheless, women have taken upon themselves the obligation of fulfilling the mitzvah, and not only that, but as in the case of many others, you know, these type of mitzvahs, they recite the brachas. Remember I said that, for example, technically, a woman is not obligated to let's say, to make a bracha of the lulav and the esrei. Nevertheless, we know that every woman, you know, is anxious to do it. She wants to do it, okay? And therefore, even though she's not, she doesn't have the mitzvah, she's not mitzuvo, shall we say, she's not commanded to fulfill it, but nevertheless, she gets full credit by saying, and she's not, you know, taking God's name in vain when she says, Asher kedishon mitzvah so it's good of al detilas lulav, or whatever it may be.
But she doesn't commit a sin if she doesn't do it.
No, that's correct.
But a man, if he doesn't do it, is
yeah, so he's right. It means that in that particular case, he's not fulfilling, right. The Aveira is not to fulfill a positive commandment.
That's the difference,
in that
yeah.
case. There's a difference, of course, between positive and negative commandments. Yeah. Everybody, men, women, everybody, are required to observe negative commandments. With positive commandments, that depends what is the nation.
Right.
If it's not, you know, dependent upon time, then in that case, women have the same obligation that men have. If it's dependent upon time, then if a woman undertakes to perform this mitzvah, as we said, then in that case, she also makes a bracha. And it's not taking God's name in vain.
Right.
Yeah, this is what we learned last week. Okay? All right. I'll do a couple of more lines in the Gemara over here, and we'll call it a night. Gemara says, now, the Hor Tanya, didn't we learn in a Baraisa something else about the length? It says, Shiur Tekiyo Kisrua, which doesn't make much sense. It says that the length of a Tekiyo is like a Trua. Now, if Trua is very short, so how long should the Tekiyo be? Very short. Not a long Tekiyo, but it's going to be a short Tekiyo. I hate to tell you, I've heard people blow with the Tekiyo, it sounds like it.
Sure.
It's not our custom, but I've heard that when we had it was an Eitan who blew on Rosh Hashanah the second day, and boom boom. That's apparently the custom that they have among the Yemenites. Yeah, among the Yemenites.
That was a
tekiah. That was a tekiah. Boom, like that. I understand that the Brisker also had a somewhat similar business.
What did they do for a Trua?
But obviously then it's not. So if you take this literally, then okay, so it's only a boop. But of course, we don't do that. Okay. Omar Abaya. Abaya said, Tana didon kochosh of tekiya, the kuchu bove. So Abaya says, no, wait a minute. Our Tana, when he makes this statement, you know, he says he really meant that the kiyah, he's really thinking about the amount of time that it takes to blow a tekiyah for all. In other words, he doesn't say just make a short blast, but it should be a longer blast. Utrus tekuhu bove, okay? Also the same thing. It should be, more than one, and so on. So Tana Bora Kochoshiv Chad Bava Vesulo. Okay. So he says he's really talking only the Tana of the Baraisa. He's only counting what one individual sound is, and he's not doing the whole thing. In other words, what he's saying is that in reality, what he means is that, as Rashi explains, Hochi Koma, this is what he means to say, that Shir, Sholosh Tekiyos, Kisholosh Truos, that three Tekiyos should be in length like three Truos. Well, as it is, needless to say, this is a problem, but it's only an individual statement. It's not our practice. So our practice we'll discuss again next week in Be'etzah Hashem. It's a 8:45 already. And I see we have a minyan, Baruch Hashem. So
yeah,
good.
Have we?
Yeah. Oh, okay. So. All right. Tonight is the 31st of January, the year 2001. Okay. And we are continuing from where we left off last week. Gemara Rosh Hashanah, Lamed Gimel, Amid Beis. I just want to remind you again that the Mishnah, which happens to be the final Mishnah that we're going to be learning in this parak, has actually two different elements in it. The first element is Seder Tekiyos, in other words, what is the order in which we blow, and they say it's three sets of three. The problem that we're going to face when we take a look at the Gemara is, you know, and what are the, how do you work out the sets, okay? And the statement over there is simply that Shir Tekiyos Kisholish Tuos, that the length of the measurement of the length of a Tekiyos should be equivalent to that of three truos. Okay, and how about the trua? So it says in the Mishnah, the shiur truas kisholosh yevavos, that the trua is three yevavos. Now, what are yevavos? This we'll discuss in a few minutes. Okay, and then in continuation with that, it said tokav rishonu moshach mishniyo yishtayim ein biyodei lachas. In other words, if somebody blew a long tekiyah after, you know, it was tekiyah, then either, let's say, shvarim or trua or something, then he blew a tekiyah which was much longer than the ordinary length of a tekiyah, can it count as two tekiyahs? In other words, as the ending of set number one, you know, the line number one, let's say, and the beginning also of line number two. This is the question, okay? And so the Mishnah says, nothing doing. Even though it was a long one, but it counts only as one tekiyah, and you'd have to blow a separate tekiyah for the next line that goes, okay? So much so far for the length of the various tekiyahs. And then it also adds the following. It says, Misha Berach, the person had already said Shmenesra, okay? But he didn't have a shofar at the time, because we're talking about our Rosh Hashanah. The Yachar Kach Nisman Aloi Shofar, and then he was able to get hold of a shofar, so he still has to blow shofar, even though he has already davened. Has to blow, right? Tokeya, Meriya, Tokeya, Sholosh B'yomin. He has to blow Tekiya, Trua, Tekiya, etc., three times. Okay. And then the last one, this is something that we'll discuss more next week. It says, "Kishem sheshliach tzibur chayov," just as the shliach tzibur is required to daven, so kach kol yochid v'yochid chayov. So likewise, every individual is required to daven. And as I pointed out last week, I mean, the reason for this statement in the Mishnah is because, as we know, the Musaf Shmanesra of Rosh Hashanah is much longer than any of the other Musaf Shmanesras during the course of the year. And, you know, people in those days without Sidurim, without Machzorim, and so on and so forth, they might not be, they might not be knowledgeable enough in order to be able to daven the Musaf Shmanesra. So that, therefore, what the Mishnah here is saying, that just as the Shliach Tzibur has an obligation to daven the, you know, the Musaf service, so every individual also has the obligation. The question is, how does the individual fulfill the obligation? You understand? How does he fulfill it? So obviously, if he knows how to daven for himself, then in that particular case, he is required to daven for himself, okay? This is what the Mishnah says at this particular point. If he doesn't, of course, then what? Then he has to listen attentively, right, to the Shliach Tzibur and respond, and, you know, have in mind that the Shliach Tzibur is helping him to fulfill the obligation of davening. Okay?
Then it would be necessary for the Shliach Tzibur to say every word out loud.
Absolutely. This is one of the reasons.
That's not necessarily so.
I know. Again and again, I keep telling people when they say Moda Manach Duloch and they're at the Yomim, they should say out loud the entire Moda Manach Duloch. No question about it. That's the proper way to do it.
That's the purpose you
have. Yeah, I mean, I don't know where Chazonim developed his business.
The first line.
Right.
I'll tell you, there's another sentence. I have been in the Kadima many years ago.
Yeah.
I'm the youngest. And it was honored with the opening the curtain somewhere.
Yeah.
Do you think there hasn't David in between? He said his words, and then didn't say a word until he came to stern again. Not a word.
Maybe he was saying it mentally.
He didn't even say it mentally.
But a chazan who does that kind of monkey business, needless to say, is not helping the congregation fulfill the obligation that is placed upon him to fulfill. Right. Right, right, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. But when you're repeating,
I mean, he's interested in doing recitativin or something like that.
He
so,
was
but
one
you're
of
right.
those yeah. concert, the big yeah. name for saying.
Oh. Yeah, okay. Believe me. There are others like. Yeah, okay. I believe it. Okay. I've noticed, I mean, I've told Chazan in the past quietly, you know, that they should do the whole thing, you know, but falls on deaf ears sometimes. They know better.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. So, Rabbi Gamliel, this is the ending of the Mishnah, says, Rabbi Gamliel, the Shneir Tzibur Motzi is HaRabbi Nechusam. It says that the Shneir Tzibur enables the congregation to fulfill their obligation to daven. As I say, this we'll have to discuss in greater detail when we get to that part of the Gemara, which is what the last page is, more or less, deal with. Okay, but we didn't get that far yet because right now the question is about the blowing of the shofar. Okay? Now, I also have to point out that we've had some of these things that we'll, you know, that we find now in the text, have already, they've appeared at other occasions of the course of the Gemara because, you know, this is the nature of a Gemara. They'll quote here, they'll quote there, they can quote to a million different sources, you see. So some of the stuff may seem, we already had this before, but it isn't necessarily so. It could be that this is the primary source, and they're simply quoting it in order to support a particular argument. So, okay, take it for that. But at any rate, the first part of the Gemara over here, where they quote the Baraisa, I have to tell you, is a little bit puzzling to me, because it doesn't quite add up. They ask a good question at the beginning. It says, well, Tanya, didn't we learn in a Baraisa, which says, Shiur Tekiya Kisrua. It says that the length of a Tekiya is like a Trua. Now, how could you do that? How could you say that? Take a look at the Mishnah again. What did it say? That Shiur Tekiya Kisholosh Truas, right? It's like three Truas, the length of a Tekiya. So how could you say that the shear of the kiyah is like that of a trua? So Omar Abayah said, Tana Dinon, the Tana who taught this particular Baraisa, he says, Kochoshev tekiyah tekuhu bovei, utruos tekuhu bovei. He is adding up all the various sounds of the tekiyahs and all the various sounds of the truas, and he says that eventually it all comes out equal. Okay? In other words, it doesn't mean, if we say, for example, that a tekiyah is the equivalent of three truas, right? So, we're not doing the mathematics right now. What we're saying is that inasmuch as the length of three truas is equivalent to one tekiyah, so if you add them up all together, so then we would say that the sum total of all the truas is equal to the sum total of all the tekiyahs.
That's the definition of
a That's a good question. What is a true? Right, right. We'll see in a minute exactly, I mean, what the problem is over there as far as definitions are concerned, okay? And then it says, Tana Bora, there's also another Tana, Baraisa, Kochoshev Chad Bava Betulo. He was only interested in one set, and that's it. All right. So at any rate, it's obvious, you know, that the shear of a trua, right, is still supposed to be what? It's still supposed to be equal in length to, that is, three truas are supposed to be equal in length to one tekiyah. Okay, good. So now they come to a different problem. It's because it says shear trua, the length of a trua is equal to kegimo yevavas, right? It's equal to three yevavas. So the question is, did I skip something?
I skipped.
Okay.
They translated here as three whispers.
I'll try to explain it. All right, first let's take a look at the text and we'll try to explain it from the text itself, okay? Bo'atanya. So they now quote another statement, another brisa. It says, Shiur Trua Kishtosha Shavari. This one says that the length of a trua is equal to 3 shavarim, whereas the previous statement said that the shiur to trua is what? Kigimul Yavavas, right? So if that's the case, we're dealing with different words. One is shvarim, right? And the other one is Yavavas. Okay. So Omar Abaye, said as follows. He says, the Hov Vadai Plige. There's no question over here that the rabbis are really disagreeing with one another as to how to define what these various sounds are. Dichsiv. Torah says what? Yom Trua Yeyeh Lochem. Says that this is to be a day of Trua. Rosh Hashanah is a day of Trua. Okay? Whatever Trua means. Of course, we translate it, you know, as sounding the shofar or something like that. But in reality, you know, what exactly is Trua? You see, that's the question. So, the Torah says it is a day of Trua. Okay. No, that being the case, now they say, Umetargaminen. And if you take a look at the Targum Unculus, you know, the Aramaic translation of Yom Truwa, how do they translate it? It says Yom Yevava Yehe Lachon, right? It is to be unto you a day of Yevava. So what's Yevava? So it says Uchsiv, and we have another pasuk in the Bible which says Be'ime de Sisra, concerning Sisra's mother. If you may remember, in the Shiras Devorah, towards the very end, she describes Sisra's mother who's back home waiting for her son the general to come home, right?
Yeah,
and of course we know that Sisra was done in already by Yael, if you remember, right? Right. But she's waiting for Sisra to come home, and it's written over there that Be'ad HaChalom, right, by the window, or Be'ad HaEshtov, actually it says, by the lattice over there, it says, yeah, Be'ad HaChalom, right, by the and then afterwards the pasuk says Be'ad HaEshtov, okay. So, Be'ad HaChalom, she's by the window, Nishkofa, and she's looking, Vatiyabev Eim Sisra. Now, what is she doing over there? The answer is, she's saying, Oi, where is my son? Okay? Why isn't Sisra home already? Okay? And she also, she imagines him, you know, if you read the Shiras Devorah, that he's bringing home all kinds of spoil and women, two women for every man, and so on and so forth, right?
Right.
And, yeah, right, okay. All right, good enough. They're consoling her. They're consoling her, right. Okay. Right. Mm-hmm. So, notice then that we find what word? Vatiyabev. So therefore we say that this describes the word Yevava, right? So good. So Mar Sovar, so the question is, so what is a Yevava? What is she doing? So one authority says Genuche Gonach, which means that she's sighing bitterly, oi. This is okay, Genuche Gonach. So, in other words, this should be equivalent to what? This should be equivalent to the Shavarim. Oi. That's Shavarim, okay? Umasava, but the other authority says, Yelila Yelila. So, that gives us what? That gives us what we call today the Trua. Okay? So now we've defined it more or less. Okay?
So that's where it comes from.
This is where it comes from, right. Yeah.
So where do they get the idea that it has to be minimum nine?
Okay. All right. You ask a very good question, so let me give you an answer immediately. All right. The answer is that since we have Malchios, Zichronos, and Shofros, so therefore there should be at least one set for Malchios and one set for Zichronos, one set for Truah. So that means that halachically, according to the law of the Torah, we have to have a minimum of 9 such sounds. But I don't have to tell you that 9 such sounds, okay? But I don't have to tell you that we also have to go by how things have developed, okay? First of all, as we see from here, they weren't certain as to what the intermediate one, which is referred to as a trua, really represents. Is it this oi, 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 or is it oi, 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 oi? You understand? So that therefore we want to be certain that we're making everybody happy. We adopt both this interpretation and this interpretation, and that's why we blow Shvarim Trua as the middle one. And as we'll see in a second, according to the law, you always have to have a tekiah before and a tekiah after.
You have a Shvarim, and then you have Trua.
Right. Right. So that's why we developed, you know, first tekiah shvarim trua tekiah, then tekiah shvarim tekiah, and then tekiah trua tekiah, to make everybody happy. Yes.
Is there a total that has to be?
Okay.
I thought there were a total number of sounds.
Yes.
And I have a figure in my right mind, but I think I'm wrong.
No, that's no problem. Before the Shmona Esrei, therefore, we have a total of 30 sounds. How do we get 30? 3 times tekiah shvarim trua tekiah, right? 3 times 12?
No.
Ah, excuse me. 12, 12, 12. No.
1 times 12, 1 times 9, 1 times 12.
3 times 4 equals 12. Okay. That's 12. And then tekiah shvarim tekiah, that's 9. All right, so 12 and 9 is already 21, right? And then tekiah through tekiah, it's another 9 sounds. I think this is 30. Okay, so we blow 30 sounds, individual sounds, okay, before we say Shmon Esmer. Okay, that's what they also call tekiah de miyushav. In other words, tekiah is that we blow while the congregation is still seated, even though congregation today our custom is to stand for it. But Rabbi Tzvi tells me that the Yemenites still have the custom that they sit during this time.
Sit during
during the blowing of the shofar, right, prior to Musaf. Yeah.
No.
Yeah. Which, you know, is really in accordance with what it says. I mean, the name that they call it, they refer to it as the Kiyot de Miyusha, okay? Kiyot de Miyusha, while seated, okay?
No,
right, okay. Then, during the repetition of the Musaf service, okay, we blow at the end of Malchios. Okay? How much do we blow? We blow 10 at that point, because it's Tekiah, Shvarim, Trua, Tekiah, Tekiah, Shvarim, Tekiah, and Tekiah, Trua, Tekiah. So that's, you know, 4, 3, and 3 gives us 10. We do exactly the same thing after the Zichronos, and we do exactly the same thing after Shofros. All right. So now we have blown 60 cells.
At the end of Malchios, you blow what?
You blow 10. Tekiah shvarim trua tekiah, tekiah shvarim tekiah, and tekiah trua tekiah. That's what you blow.
Some places, some loading are you blow on 4:33.
Yeah.
4 after Malchios, 4 after Zichronos, and 3 after Zichronos, and 3 after Shofros. I think that's what it is.
Well, I'm telling you what our custom is.
We didn't blow 30.
All right, right.
But this is different.
Well, I'm telling you what our custom is. And, you know, this is the custom of all the Ashkenazi communities in Eastern Europe, and we follow the tradition. Okay? All right. So, we've now blown 60 sounds, okay? But there's a tradition that says that on Rosh Hashanah you blow 100 sounds. Right. Okay. Mea kolos. Okay? 100 sounds. So, how do we make it up? So our custom is that after we have completed the chassan has finished the musaf service, right, Usually we break it up, you know, he starts the Kaddish, you know, the Kaddish Shalom afterwards, and then before Tiskabel, Zalosan, then they blow 40 sounds in order to complete it. Okay. Amongst Fardim, the custom is a little different, because they blow after Malchios, Zichronos, and Shofros, even during the silent prayer, so that they have already blown 30, so all that they have to do is to catch up with another 10 afterwards. Huh?
They all stop at the same time?
They're supposed to stop at the same time, yeah. Several times I've had to daven as the Shliach Tzibur, you know, the Baal Musaf, in the places where they followed the Hasidic customs, you know. So in that particular case, what they did, they blew. They stopped, they blew, and then they continue with the next section, and so, and then they stopped and blew, and so on, and so forth. Yeah. All right. So, So, as we say, you know, the custom, why do we blow a shvorim and a teruah, is because, you know, precisely over here, we don't know how to translate this business. Is it a, you know, what is a yavava, right? What is a teruah? Is it a sigh, or is it a rapid sob? You know, okay. Okay. Tanu Rabbanan, another thing. Minayim sheba shofar. How do we know that you're supposed to blow a shofar? Of course, if you remember way back, we had a whole discussion why it has to be, what is the shofar of Rosh Hashanah? And we said, you know, it has to be something from, you know, an animal where you can scoop it out.